The Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition proudly welcomes you to The Mix-Up, an iBites production. I'm your host, Chef Patrick Garmong, mixing it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. Today, our guest is Chef Patrick Durgan, Executive Chef and Director of Food Services for Bellingham Public Schools with the Good Food Project. Chef, welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. Glad to be here.
So the topic on everyone's mind right now is feeding children during COVID-19. How has your district been able to adapt to facilitating non-congregate feeding?
Well, that's a really good question because, you know, it goes against just about everything that we hold dear, near and dear to our hearts in food services, which is efficiency and teamwork and collaboration and being close to each other and working shoulder to shoulder and making things happen during times like this. You know, I think back to when we have school day or snow day closures in our school district, and our district is really tries to make sure we capture that need for food and those meals that these kids rely on throughout the school year. And we jump right into it, and we feed, you know, this last year we had about a week of closures, and we fed about 800 kids a day, 800 kids a day. And that was something that was really proud kind of body of work that our district has done. This is completely different because everything that we, like I said, everything we hold as part of our values of being efficient and working together, those things are out the window right now. So it's been really challenging. We closed our schools on the 16th of this month. Our last day was Friday the 13th. I'm not sure that was a coincidence as we move forward with this closure. we wanted to start serving on Tuesday. And we, as we got in to learn more and more about this virus and how it transmits and just the early stages of understanding in our country and in the world, in a lot of ways, we kept just pausing and realizing that we need to really think carefully about how we do this work to make sure that first and foremost, that our people are safe, that our community is safe, and the work that we're doing is not counterproductive on that level, but also that we just felt like we needed to understand more. We needed to come up with a new process that hasn't been tried out in our district before. And so we hit pause and we wanted to learn and understand. And we probably went through, I would say 24 different theoretical models of service throughout last week, just as we learned more and understood more about how to keep people safe and some of the protocols and procedures that we needed to follow. We worked with our Unified Command, which is our county emergency task force, and we worked with the health department as they were kind of putting their structure together. It was clear that what we do in our departments and what we do across the nation in food service and the K-12 environment, we are the experts of what we do. And it was clear that relationship with the health department in our county, at least, it's a very good one. And we shared resources and we could do this on the fly. And we really tried to help them. You know, the health department covers so much in regard to the health of our communities. So this food piece was an important relationship. And we started really trying to understand more about what was happening in places that are already experiencing some pretty heavy, you know, impact from this virus. And again, you know, maybe 12 different models, but what we came to a conclusion that there is no perfect model. And that, I think, was a realization that we all had to have. And we had to daily, hourly, every minute, remind ourselves that efficiency is not the number one goal. And that is something that goes against all of our nature in the food service world. Like, efficiency is our friend. And for us to have to realize that and accept that. And that was a challenging thing because everybody wants to get out there and do it. And it was really hard to kind of pull those reins back and try to understand more. So we've come up with some protocols, really kind of trying to relearn how we do our work, I guess, is a good way to put it. We've established, you know, 6-foot, space between everybody, but where do you find the space to do that? And how do you make sure, you know, we have a really beautiful centralized kitchen that is really geared for this type of work, but not with a virus. You know, we're, we've got a really fantastic model where we can produce a ton of food, but it's also designed to keep, you know, keep people close to each other and get this work done. And
so, yeah. So talk about food production right now. Are you all using prepackaged food items, or are you producing speed scratch, scratch based foods and distributing those? What's your current
that's
model?
That's a great question. And I know we started with some of the prepackaged things. We're doing kind of a hybrid. We are packaging some of our own fruits and vegetables. We are, cooking off pizza and cooking off burgers and chicken sandwiches and cooling those down and putting those into packages. You know, we're fortunate in our district that we have a kitchen that allows us to do more than other districts can. And that's something that we're really trying to recognize. And if we cannot pull all those prepackaged products coming into our program, and we can do a little bit more of some of that speed scratch. And we're actually looking at a new model now. We've been doing sack lunches every day this week. We're doing breakfast and lunch together. That was one of the allowances that was pretty clear from the very get-go. And we started doing breakfast and lunch together. We did about, I think we did 1,300 meals the first day, and we're up to over 1,600 the last 3 days. And what we've done is tried to establish a structure of we have 16 sites that we're doing these, this distribution. We're doing kind of a drive-through model. We looked at so many different models of reverse bus routes and, setting up sites, doing drive-through, doing grab and go. And so we really fell on the grab and go model, kind of a drive-through bus loop type of a model. We've got structure of tables that we can separate people from having to have that direct contact. We've just put in some physical barriers as part of our process. And then in our kitchens, we've established like an isolation zone. So we have 1 to 2 employees at each of our 10 schools. And then we have 6 satellite sites that those meals come out of our centralized kitchen. But
so sorry to interrupt you. You all set up different sites so that you could kind of take the almost pod mentality? So if one site got sick, you were able to still operate with others. Was that kind of the thought process behind that?
That is exactly what that thought process was. And so twofold, keep people safe by keeping them isolated and not crossing over each other all the time. And also to your point, when we have sickness and when we have illness come into our program, we have other sites that are able to pick up that slack and pick up that work from any one of our sites. Other sites, yeah, that's exactly.
That's a really smart strategy, keeping your people safe and also maintaining the integrity of the program. You do have some illness, kudos to you all for doing that. What's been one of your biggest training challenges, you think, with getting staff to adapt to this new working environment?
Well, I would say the technology piece has been one of the bigger challenges. That's one of the challenges we have with our staff. Anyways, we're all a little long in the tooth, I would say, and we don't always have the best tech skills. We need someone like Tom to really help get our staff up to speed. That's probably been the biggest thing. And really, we're a really tight-knit crew. I think like most child nutrition services teams, we're tight. We want to be together. We want to be giving hugs and support each other. And that's been a real challenge. And so, you know, like everybody else, we've been adapting to Zoom and learning how to do things differently. I think it's a great opportunity after we get through this to continue to use some of this technology as part of our model and in our program. And so we're thinking about all these opportunities that are coming out of this to be better, to be more efficient, to be more communicative on a daily basis without having to get everybody together. And you know, there's some really cool opportunities that are coming out of this, but I'd say, you know, the biggest challenge is always going to be people. The biggest challenge in day-to-day operations in a normal structure is always people, supporting them, making sure they have the information they need, making sure they've got the training resources that they need and the tools to do their jobs in the most effective way. And it's been really hard. Gratefully for all of our staff that they want to be out there on the front lines. They want to be out there doing it. And that's been the hardest thing up to this week, was just not having anything to do, because we just had to figure things out and make sure that we were doing things safely. Because one thing we realized early is this is going to be a marathon, not a sprint, and we need to be prepared for long, enduring crisis and make sure that we're prepared for that. And our biggest hope is that, you know, when this is all said and done, we look back and go, God, that we really overprepared and we really did more than we had to do to retain safety and to make sure we're out there getting meals out to kids. I hope that's the case. And we're keeping our fingers crossed and praying that that's what we look back on. But we're planning on a worst case scenario and trying to do everything we can to mitigate those challenges.
Absolutely. So most districts already have a series of SOPs developed for emergency planning for power outages or inclement weather days or, you know, a series of odd natural disasters and to set up feeding for short term. Were you able to utilize any of your district SOPs to kind of help craft how your team was going to start operating? Or were those basically thrown out the window? I know you said that you kind of started working with a command force, I think is what you called it, within your community. Yeah. How did you bring those people together to help you all start crafting best practices as they apply to your area? Because we know that different areas around the nation, although this is the same disease, different areas are impacted differently. It sounds like working with your local health community and health department were really impactful. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how you made those connections and got that process up and going so quickly?
You bet. The one thing that I think we are so grateful for in our county is that we've had a really tight relationship pretty much with all these service providers and all these support organizations, whether they're foundations or Opportunity Council, Sustainable Connections. There's just so many of these entities. We work together all the time already. And that's one of the great things that we've learned about school districts is that we're in it. We're in all these different aspects of our community. We're helping the needy. We're reaching out to families that need support in so many different ways. We're working with these other organizations that help to address these students that have need or, you know, have some sort of, not a disability, but disadvantage in some way. So we're already connected. And that was what made this process really so easy to really get into is we had relationships, we had trust built already. In fact, our district safety coordinator actually got kind of absorbed into the Unified Command Task Force. And he's actually overseeing a lot of this work for food services and childcare from that unified command post. So the integration of our district and our work into this countywide task force has been really instrumental. So having these conversations, having the trust already in place that we could trust each other to do work independently and come together and share has been really instrumental. And like I said, thankfully, we've had these good relationships. We've worked with the health department every step of the way during everything that we do, whether we're building a new school, whether we're opening our central kitchen. Those are pieces that and relationships that we've already had. So in the time of crisis, we didn't have to build those. And that was something that kind of kept us moving forward potentially a little bit quicker than we would have otherwise. Really just being open, being transparent, trying to put everything on the table, putting our egos aside, and making sure that we're all doing the right things for the right reasons. And that has been something that's been so, so great to see happen. We have not had any conflict. We have not had any egos, any bumping of heads. And really what we're all trying to do is learn together.
That's amazing. I mean, a lot of times, you know, when you start working with agencies, everyone's kind of an alpha, right? They're the leader in their field. Yeah. And to get people to be able to put those egos aside and learn from each other and glean from each other and move forward in the same direction is just, it's so impactful. So hats off to you and your command task force up there that have been able to respond to this so quickly, work together, work collaboratively to feed children, because that's really what it's all about. Yeah. So when we talk about feeding children, obviously kids can have all sorts of fun opinions about food. So what have been some of your, I know you guys have only been going for a week, but feedback comes quickly at times. Have you guys got any good feedback on some meals that children have really enjoyed as you guys been able to get them out there to them?
You know, that's a good question. In this time of separation, social separation, we haven't got a ton of feedback. What we've got is a lot of just gratitude and thanks. We have seen tears when families have been able to connect with their teachers and see them at those feeding sites. And we've had principals that have been engaged with this work. And just for them to be able to see their students and for these families to be able to just share that, that visual line of sight and the gratitude that they have for each other, and to understand that this is really a challenging time for everyone. And these relationships that are so important with our teachers, with our school staff, and with our students, that's been the thing that really has been driving us this, this week, is just seeing and hearing these stories from families. And I think the food is such a secondary element at this point. Yeah, students have a lot of opinions about food. I think everybody's just grateful that there's that we're doing something and that there's food getting out to and get out into the community. And really, I haven't heard neither hide nor hair about whether the food is good or not. we're looking to move into a new model as well. And this is something that's kind of exciting to me. We're trying to do multi-day feeding right now. And I want to just throw out that our superintendent of public instruction in that office has been so great trying to receive all these questions and trying to work with the USDA to apply for all these waivers for non-congregate feeding, for multi-day service.
And that's your state office you're talking about?
Yeah, the that's the state office. That's exactly right.
In
Washington State, yeah. They've been so great and so communicative and so, I would say, just so supportive and acknowledging the hard work that's going on out there. And also, you know, really being very aware of the needs that just and the regulations that just don't make sense anymore. You know, the fact that that a parent couldn't come up and get food for their kids that potentially that are at home and should be at home, but the USDA regulations make us, you know, make sure that there's a kid there. That waiver was approved yesterday, so or the day before. I can't remember. Days are all blending together, but I would say the USDA has been doing a good job of listening to states and listening to the, to our public instruction entities in our in within our individual states and making some of these national waivers happen. It's a new age, right? And these procedures and protocols that are in place and guidelines that are in place for us to follow, most of them just don't make sense right now. And so I would just say I give a lot of gratitude to our state Office of Public Instruction and their support for us during this time. Back to the boxes. So we're looking to do, we just got the approval to do 5 days at a time worth of meals. So 10 meals at a time that we can provide to a student, and we can just use our summer feeding tally sheets to do that work, which makes it a lot less cumbersome and a lot easier for us to do that. So we're looking at providing 5 days worth of meals at a time and trying to find boxes that work, trying to find mechanisms for getting dairy. We were looking at half gallons of milk that we can distribute out to families. So we're not using all these little tiny pieces. We're trying to make it as efficient as we can. And we did a little trial run with some of these boxes. And we did 200 boxes in 2.5 hours with 3 people. So wow. The efficiencies that we can get by doing multi-day services is incredible. And that also falls right in line with our protocols, with keeping social distancing, keeping less people in place. And Patrick, I'm going to send you some videos that we've taken over the last couple of days of our central kitchen and showing some of the workspaces that we've established. And we've established some real smaller rooms, less people, using shifts of people that come through. And we're still trying to limit the amount of people that we have coming into our kitchen.
Oh, please send them. Yeah, we'd love to share those and share some of the best practices from the field on how you all are really transitioning your operations to facilitate this this complete change in how we're feeding our children. You know, I hear you talking about changing from small cartons to half gallons of milk. I mean, that's a huge shift on the supply chain, and there's so many different pieces that go into this beyond just providing a meal for children. It goes into your new procurement practices, your training, you're developing SOPs so that your staff has a clear understanding. I love hearing that you all are using technology to start doing group meetings and that that's going to be able to transition to be able to conduct better training after this event's over. So being able to glean some good takeaways from it. Yeah. If you had one piece of advice to share to operators out there that are kind of struggling or are just starting this up, what one key piece of wisdom would you give them to give them some guidance or hope as they start embarking on this new endeavor?
I think the biggest thing we've learned is just be really patient with the process and make sure that everybody's on board with the protocol and procedures that you put into place. Again, this is not about efficiency right now. And that goes against everything that we've been taught in our business and everything that we hold near and dear to our hearts and our food service operations is, you know, efficiency is not number one. It's safety. Safety for all, safety for ourselves, safety for our staff, and safety for our community. And, you know, with an invisible enemy like we have going on right now, you just never know where that is. And so to get these procedures in place and to make sure that everybody's on board, we have a lot of enthusiasm within our school districts. We have a lot of enthusiasm with our volunteers. Getting them to slow down and getting them to just take some deep breaths and to just acknowledge that this work has to be done a little bit differently. And I would say that you know, we found a lot of reward going back and looking at some of the work that we've done, and the patients that we had feels like we absolutely did the right thing. And the other thing that is just making sure we collaborate and communicate. Communication at this time is such an important thing. Just making sure that as things change daily, hourly, that there's a method and a method to the madness, so to speak, and really be sure to plan for what's next. Be looking today, tomorrow, but be looking 3 weeks ahead. And, you know, that's something that we're trying really hard to establish some structure right now. We're trying to establish normalcy to what we do and what we, the procedures and the model that we have in place. And again, as we learn every day, that model is changing, and we expect that model to change. But what we need to plan for is who's going to fill the gaps when people start going down, when people start getting sick, who's backing them up, and where is that information being held so that not one person is holding all these things. And when they go out, all that information gets lost. So we're working with our teams folders. We're putting all of our working documents, all of our operational tracking sheets, everything, our contact lists, all of those things are in one spot. We're using a Teams folder so that we can invite people in. We make sure everybody's up to speed every single day, and that if and when somebody goes down and falls out of the loop, that all the information that they were using to play their role is there, and it's ready for someone to pick back up again. So I think that's a critical thing to be thinking about. Is, you know, we like to just do things. We're doers. You know, we like to get things done. We like to hold everything to our, you know, we can do it. I got this. Don't worry. This is the time to share. This is the time to share what we do. This is the time to make sure sharing resources, sharing communication, sharing contact lists, sharing all of these things, so that when something does happen in the next weeks, months, that there's somebody there to pick up that slack. Because what we're really afraid of is when we start doing something, we don't want to have to pull back. When we're feeding our community, we don't want to have to stop doing that because there was some sort of catastrophic failure at some point. I mean, when you think about HACCP, and the rules around HACCP, this is HACCP just in a little different, with a different lens,
you know, right?
But the control points for our people and for our process.
Absolutely. Well, Chef, I cannot thank you and your team enough for everything you're doing to feed children out there, to make sure that our communities are staying healthy. The level of commitment you all put into getting your program set up the right way is evident, and clearly very passionate about what you've been doing and how you've been able to facilitate change so quickly within your organization. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Patrick. And hey, we're all in this together, right?
That's right.
This is what it's all about.
Absolutely.
What a great time to come together. What a great time to do the right things for the right reasons.
Absolutely. Chef, thank you so much. Join us next time as we continue to mix it up with culinary experts from the child nutrition community. I've been your host, Chef Patrick Garmong from the Culinary Institute of Child Nutrition. Hey, don't forget to wash your hands.
This project has been funded at least in part with federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture Food and Nutrition Service through an agreement with the Institute of Child Nutrition at the University of Mississippi. The contents of this publication do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, nor does mention of trade names, commercial products, or organizations imply endorsement by the U.S. government. The University of Mississippi is an EEOAA Title VI, Title IX, Section 504, ADA, ADEA employer. In accordance with federal law and U.S. Department of Agriculture policy, this institution is prohibited from discriminating on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability. To file a complaint of discrimination, write USDA Director, Office of Civil Rights, Room 326W, Whitten Building, 1400 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 202-509-410, or call 202-720-5964. USDA is an equal opportunity provider and employer.